The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Wait a minute. Do you still think politics is boring? Well, not when you can say fun words like caucus. Yes, it's fun words like caucus and more. With the intellectual, intersexual, and intersectional, Nicole Sandler on NicoleSandler.com.
Cause the outbreak and the spread of corruption. That's the stench of a dying system attracting a worm. He got elected because of the blind desperation. Then took from the country everything that he could earn.
Congress has been bought and sold. Lobbyists exceed the 30-fold. Elections, let's take a look at those. The versions that are too dumb.
Election corruption has nothing to do with dead voters or ballot box stuffing or voting machines with encoders. It's not about dictators, debit still wielding their power, and not about drop-offs or voting in earlier hour.
It got bad back in 2010. The Supreme Court made a decision then. Citizens United, the corporation playpen. Why a candidate can put them in? The rich can now just legally cry. The Congress, of course, just watch them fight. Their own taxes they proscribe. Pushing the burden onto the poor.
What could go wrong when you put the weight of the system on the backs of the poorest who struggle with no assist? Burdened with debt from a college they barely remember, raising a family on barely enough to exist. The bribery of Congress gets regulatory capture, with corporate stooges appointed to places of power, where they oversee and protect their own corruption, safe from the law in the arms of their ivory tower.
Don't know where we go from here. It's all fear and greed and fear. Hope that something better will appear, for now we'll have to leave.
Ah, the parody project strikes again. Corruption. Yes. A lot of words there. But, you know, singing truth to power, I guess. And since today we're talking about legalese, we're talking about... yes, everything. By the way, just look, glanced over at the chat room, and Jan asks, is your link to buy the BlendJet 2 on your website? Yes, it is. And thank you for asking. So if you go to NicoleSandler.com, right there on the main page, like right under the main menu, it says support our sponsors. And click on there, and there's links to not only the BlendJet 2 offer, where you get 12% off and free shipping by using my link there. There's also a link to Nom Nom, where you get 50% off your first supply of dog food, great natural dog food, which you should definitely check out if you've got a dog, and BetterHelp. .com as well, where you can get 10% off your first month of therapy. So yes, it's all right there. Yes, and Parody Project is awesome. Don Caron has really kicked it into high gear in the recent months. He's churning them out like, you know, a few a week. So Anyway, and that one works for today because today we are dealing with all the legalese, and Lisa Graves is here. Now, those of you who haven't been around this show very long may not know Lisa Graves, but you will and you should. So Lisa is, you know, is the legal expert of the Nicole Sandler Show. And when she comes on the show, she's acting in her capacity as an individual, a citizen, and an accomplished attorney. Lisa, I don't even have her whole resume printed out anymore. And if I went through the whole thing, we'd be here all day. But she worked, for instance, on the Senate Judiciary Committee. She was in charge of like nominations and stuff, so vetting all the candidates that they nominated for various positions. She also worked at in the Justice Department under both Janet Reno, Attorney General in the Clinton administration, and what's his name? I always want to not Alberto Gonzalez, the other one. It'll come to me in the W investigation administration. God, why am I drawing a blank on his name? Ashcroft. I always want to say Richard Ashcroft because he was the singer from The Verve, but it's John Ashcroft was the attorney general, the crooked attorney general. You know, most Republicans aren't they? Yeah. Anyway, so Lisa Graves has paid her dues. Has the bona fides, as they say. Yes, I got Ashcroft, but I go between John and Richard. Anyway, so Lisa will be here, and what a day, because there's been action today on the legal front. So a few things happened. One is, first of all, a topic we don't talk about often here, because I don't think there's any there. But a special counsel for Hunter Biden? Are you kidding me? I just don't get it. So there's that. There was the hearing in Judge I'm pulling up the protective order governing discovery and authorizing disclosure of grand jury testimony in the courtroom of Judge Tanya Chutkan. It was the first official hearing in this, I'll call it the insurrection case, even though he's not charged with insurrection, but the third, the most recent indictment of the former guy. They had their first hearing today dealing with that protective order. And what the protective order is not a gag order, as Trump is inferring and his minions are, you know, protesting. They're not gagging him. I wish they would, because then we'd have a little peace. But they're basically saying that he can't disclose any information that he gleans from discovery. And discovery is, look, Jack Smith's office has been compiling a case and they've got lots of evidence, and they have to turn over to the defense what evidence they've amassed. That's discovery. What Donald Trump wants to be able to do is take the discovery that they get and plaster it all over the media. He wants to try the case in the media. And this judge is saying, watch out, friend, because this ain't happening. And again, I'm going to wait for Lisa to come on to give you the more specifics, because what I'm giving you is the layperson's take on all of it. Somebody just said, Rick Smith, Trump should have been indicted a long time ago just for his hair. You know, one thing that really bothers me is how the entirety of Trump has been normalized. And start with his hair. There's nothing normal about that man. And the fact is, you saw that. It's a bird's nest on top of his head. It used to freak me out, but I think we've gotten used to it. And so we're not as shocked by the thing on the top of his head anymore as we used to be. But we should be. Do you remember when you first saw, like, he always had weird hair, but then as he started getting older, the bird's nest got bigger. But he talks about it like it's like he talks about those phone calls. It's the perfect call. It's the perfect hair. I've got the best hair. No, he doesn't. Everything he says, it's the opposite of reality. That's why I talk about opposite world all the time. It's pretty astounding. It makes no sense. But what else happened today? There was more. Oh, did you hear Michael Cohen is talking about running for Congress? Yes. Let me say that again. Michael Cohen, the Trump's former, fixer, Michael Cohen, the one who paid off Stormy Daniels and went to jail and then, you know, got a conscience and came over to the good side. And he's talking about primarying Jerry Nadler. Now, okay, this all just broke, so I haven't really considered it in all of its grandiosity. But really, I don't know how I feel about that. What do you think? I guess I don't know. He'd be better than George Santos or whatever his name is, I suppose. But there's still the ew factor, isn't there? A little bit about Michael Cohen. I mean, I'm happy that he came to the, he saw the light. He went towards the light. And he came out on the right side of justice. But man, I don't know. All eyes, I got to share with you my favorite video of the day, maybe of the week. Because, you know, it is a Friday. Yeah. And so all eyes are on Iowa this weekend because, you know, it's the Iowa State Fair. I got to tell you, a few years ago, we talked about this a little bit when Dan Navarro was on the other day. There is a thing that a tool that's being used in radio now called voice tracking. You know, the internet made it possible so that I could be sitting here in my studio in Florida and they send me the music logs for a radio station. In this case, I voice tracked for a radio station in Des Moines, Iowa for about 7 years. I voice tracked weekends and I'd fill in during the week and they'd send me the music logs and I'd record the breaks where I'm supposed to talk, because everything is written out for you. It's all pre-programmed. And I would send it back, and they would insert it into the program, into the computer, and it would play, and it sounded like I was in the studio in Des Moines. I've never set foot in Des Moines. I've never been in the state of Iowa. But every year, when the Iowa State Fair would come around, I had to talk about it as if, you know, I'd go all the time. So I'd talk about the ridiculous foods and the butter cow and all the ridiculous stuff they had there. This is what radio, commercial radio, has come to these days. And I bring it up because the Iowa State Fair is in full swing. Do you remember the pictures of Michelle Bachmann eating the corn dog? And it looked like she was, you know, performing oral sex on a thing. That was from the Iowa State Fair. Anyway, all the candidates go there when a presidential campaign is going on, and they're all, you know, because they all want to have a good showing in the Iowa caucuses. So somebody, there's a video that was posted that I think, if it hasn't already gone viral, it should. So for those of you just listening to the audio stream and not seeing the video, I will tell you what we're seeing here. There's Ron DeSantis's bus. And the bus, you can see the painted side of the bus. And it says, never back down. And it looks like people have signed the bus for whatever reason. And there's a QR code. It says, text Ron to, and a number. It's Ron DeSantis's bus. Well, there's a woman standing outside of the bus with a bullhorn. And she's Well, she is talking to the bus through the bullhorn. And here's what it sounded like. Okay, in case you can't hear what she's saying, pudding fingers, because, you know, Ron DeSantis is known to have eaten pudding with his fingers. So, pudding fingers, go back to Florida, pudding fingers. Okay, so now you know, you can sing along. Pudding fingers, to Florida, pudding fingers. Now the camera is panning, and you see Ron DeSantis and the lovely Casey walking towards the crowd, the throngs of five people waiting to see him. But she's still singing, pudding fingers, pudding fingers. Now somebody... Now, in this case, wait, I just got to tell you, because, okay, so one of, get the fuck away from me. One of DeSantis's flunkies goes up to the woman with the bullhorn and starts trying to bat the bullhorn away. And so she's shouting through the bullhorn right into this guy's face. Let me back it up so you don't miss any of the grandiosity here. Get the fuck away from me. Get the fuck. Go back to Florida, pudding fingers. Pudding fingers. Go back to Florida, pudding fingers. So, again, my favorite video of the day. Oh, to be in, you know, and I don't know who this woman is, but I've got to think that she's a Republican. Who else would be out there today? But it doesn't matter. Whoever she is, I applaud the pudding fingers lady. And I have it handy just in case you just need to hear it at any point. Pudding fingers, go back to Florida. Pudding fingers, pudding fingers. All right. So anytime you need it, you just let me know. I've got it standing by. Uh-oh, and I think I broke this. Anyway, I believe our guest is here. So Lisa Graves, I see her in the Zoom room. Her mic is on. Okay, so now I can bring her in and introduce Lisa Graves, our legal expert here on the Nicole Sandler Show, former Deputy Assistant Attorney General under... two, count them, two administrations, the Clinton and the W, as well as a counsel in the Senate Judiciary Committee. Lisa Graves, I could fill the whole hour with your experience, and I thank you so much for bringing it here and helping me sift through this legal stuff.
Oh, you're so great to have me on, Nicole, and it's so nice of you to put up that photo from the premiere of the 13th, Ava DuVernay's amazing film about the 13th Amendment. So sorry I'm not on camera today, but I really appreciate the chance to join you.
Oh, well, I always appreciate it. And my listeners, you've got a lot of fans now in the chat room because you've been on a number of times with me and they love you, as do I. So thank you so much for being here. I didn't know that that's what this photo was from. It's a great picture.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny because they had us walk the red carpet and then they said, you know, pose. So that is not a familiar experience for me, but I was thrilled to be there because Ava's film is so important and it's available. I hear a lot of people are, you know, have seen it, but also that it's used in school curriculum to teach people about the meaning of the 13th Amendment and then what happened after that Civil Rights Amendment passed. You know, for the last 150 years, kind of how it's been evaded by these different policies. So she was nominated for an Oscar for that film. I think she won a BAFTA. I think she should have won the Oscar, but it really is a great film. If you haven't seen it, please check it out. It's called The 13th, and it's by Ava DuVernay. So thanks for letting me make that plug, Nicole.
Anytime. So do I hear you correctly? There are schools that are actually showing sort of fact-based dramatic movies. That's astounding to me because, you know, I'm here in the fascist state of Florida where, you know what they're showing kids in the classrooms here?
PragerU.
PragerU.
PragerU propaganda.
Oh yeah. My God. And I'm seeing on the, you know, like the Nextdoor site and stuff like that, people saying that their kids are being shown these videos from PragerU. That's nothing but right-wing propaganda.
I mean, at one point, I actually thought I should just stop everything I'm doing and write rebuttals to all the deceptive claims made by PragerU. But there have been so many things to do around the court and the rule of law. I haven't had a chance to do it, but I have looked at a number of their videos. I'm not saying every single one of them is lying from top to bottom, but what I can say is that numerous PragerU videos that I've seen are filled with lies and disinformation. And it's shocking that any school district in the country would give them a platform, since it's just so notoriously filled with disinformation. It's malpractice for those videos, those PragerU. It's not even a university, obviously. No. That's just the name. Like, from the get-go, it's deceptive. The name is PragerU, as if it's a university, when it's really just the videos that have been spawned by this radio televangelist dude with a lot of money from secret sources to basically tell lies to the American people, dressed up in fancy little 3-minute video pieces and more. And so it's appalling that those things are being used to educate kids, let alone adults. And in fact, you know, I'm on some of their mailing lists or whatever, and they complain about how some of their videos have been taken down by YouTube, which really it's an enormous, you know, thing to be taken down by YouTube, because so much junk is on YouTube. Yeah. But even they have transgressed in some of their videos that they, you know, can't get them aired on YouTube, but they could be aired in Florida schools, apparently, under the reign of Ron DeSantis.
It's astounding. It's astounding. And now today I'm perusing, you know, the web, and I come across this article, A Crooks and Liars, and the headline is Dennis Prager, What's Wrong with Masturbating to Child Porn? And did you see this story? Apparently, Dennis Prager believes that, like, animated child pornography, that's okay. Here it says, PragerU kids cartoon videos for children as young as kindergarten age not only soft-pedal the history of slavery, racism, colonialism, and police brutality, they show sympathy for them. In one video, Leo and Layla meet Christopher Columbus. Columbus tells young Leo and Layla, quote, slavery is as old as time and has taken place in every corner of the world. Being taken as a slave is better than being killed. No? Okay, so that's bad enough. That's astounding that they're showing kids in school. But there's another video. Prager tells a host that he doesn't consider animated child pornography evil. Because, oh, wait a minute, there's audio here. Listen.
Would you use the word evil of animated child pornography? Because no, I certainly can't, would.
No, I would use it.
Uh-oh. Come on.
Here. That's where we might differ, forgetting the sex issue. You can't be evil. You didn't do evil if you thought evil. You did evil
if
you committed.
If I'm masturbating to animated pictures of pornography, I'm not doing something evil.
That's correct.
Yeah, I think that's despicable. Yeah.
Really? Oh,
yeah. Yes, of at course.
Least at least this guy called him out for it. Apparently, he said masturbating to anime child pornography is fine.
Yeah, I mean, that is despicable. The guy who asked him the question was spot on. That's despicable. And I think there's more to learn about Dennis Prager's extreme views that, you know, most people would find appalling, and how he's tried to, you know, use this brand of PragerU with the capital U as a way to, you know, really get into people's homes through their computers with a pack of propaganda. And so he's not a credible source in my view. That interview alone seems disqualifying to me. I can't imagine a parent would want to have their kids getting videos produced by a guy who holds that view, because obviously child porn is inherently damaging, whether it's, quote, fictional or real. It's absurd. And, you know, the fact that parents don't know that, you know, aren't being told that the guy producing the videos that are now being spoon-fed to their kids in schools is the very same guy who has taken that position publicly. I mean, people have a right to know that about him.
Yeah, without a doubt. And people should know that. And the fact that they're pushing this in the schools while DeSantis screams about indoctrinating our children, what the hell do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, PragerU is almost like textbook indoctrination. That's exactly what it's designed to do. And they are targeting kids with their disinformation. And also like the Columbus stuff and the slave. Like, I actually cannot believe that we are sitting here, standing here in 2023, and we're even having a debate about the evil of slavery.
Yep.
Slavery is, regardless of when it has taken place on the planet, it is an inherent evil. It is an evil that has no mitigating factors to it. And anyone who can't say that slavery is evil has, you know, is definitely someone who's defending an evil institution, an evil practice, and you know, really is morally bankrupt.
Yes.
Because this should be the easiest thing any politician, any human could say is, of course slavery is wrong. Of course slavery is evil. Of course there's no like beneficial components to slavery to people who are enslaved against their will. And the fact that there are politicians and their operatives willing to assert otherwise is just, I mean, it's just a damn shame. And it's truly appalling.
It really is. So this popped out of sort of nowhere today. But there was lots of other legal happenings today. Now, we knew, Lisa, that there was going to be a hearing, the first actual hearing in this third case against Donald Trump, this one having to do with his actions around January 6th. The indictment that just came out a couple of weeks ago that's being tried in D.C. with the judge. And I keep having a blank on her name. I have to keep pulling it up. What is Judge Chutkan, who seems very... Yes. You know, kind of chill, just like nonplussed, like I'm going to get through this and I'm going to be sensible and I'm going to be fair, but I'm not going to stand for any of your shit. And so today, although Trump's people tried to delay it yet again, she said, we're having this hearing Friday morning, 10 a.m. about the protective order. And can you explain what a protective order in this case is?
Well, a protective order is not the same as a gag order, even though there's been this effort by Trump and his apologists to convey it that way. It's very common in fact, even without a protective order, there are longstanding rules regarding whether, trying to prevent attorneys and their clients from basically polluting the jury pool through trying the case in the media. And so this is nothing new. This is a longstanding part of U.S. jurisprudence, is the effort to make sure that we can have a fair trial. And that has been upheld literally thousands of times in U.S. history to make sure that people aren't trying their cases in public in a way that taints the jury. Because the purpose of the jury trial is to ensure a fair trial by impartial jurors, people who have not been tainted by having a predetermined point of view for an outcome, that they are fair and fairly considering the case. And that means that they're considering evidence, meaning material that people are willing to state under oath, under penalty of perjury, not just random nonsense that someone says into a microphone trying to defend themselves and hype up a crowd. A trial, one of the chief benefits of trial, as my friend Mary Catherine reminds me regularly, is that it's a trial about truth. Mm-hmm. Trials are about evidence. And so you can't just put anything in evidence just because, you know, it's your latest talking point. It has to be actually true, or something that you're willing to testify under oath is actually true.
Right.
That's why in long stand, you know, for decades, centuries, there have been rules about hearsay because you can't just put into evidence what someone else said to you because you may not be a reliable witness.
Right, and you don't have firsthand knowledge that you can't testify about it. Right.
We, in general, with some limited exceptions, the court requires the person's actual testimony in court under oath, under penalty of perjury, so that the jury can see with their own eyes and ears someone's testimony and whether they're being truthful. So this protective order issue is about the efforts of Trump to assert that he has some sort of freestanding, unlimited First Amendment right to say whatever he wants about the trial, about the case, without following the longstanding traditional rules regarding trials. And so this this hearing today was about that issue that is an issue in general in all criminal and civil cases. And it's not abnormal. It's not exceptional. What's exceptional is having a defendant who is so unbound to facts and truth and law that he thinks that he can do whatever he wants, regardless of what the longstanding rules that govern trials and juries and jurors and lawyers and ethical codes have held for, you know, well over a century in America.
Right. But Donald Trump, look, he's never played by the rules. He thinks he can say whatever he wants. And what he deems is the truth, despite the fact that it's complete bullshit. So the judge today basically spelled out the terms about what he can and can't say. And I think she's being very careful, just as Jack Smith was, not to charge on things that he said, not because all they were going on is this is a First Amendment case. They're trying to silence him. Not at all. It's not about what he said. It's about what he did or didn't do. And but it has nothing to do with his speech. So this is all about you have the right to protest. You have the right to say you disagree with whatever. You do not have the right to show these documents that are, in many cases, I guess, classified information, but also stuff that is not to be what she's calling sensitive materials. And in the order, because I'm looking at the court order right now, it's just a 5-page document. And it spells out there's no limit on documents or that he already has or that are in the public domain already, but sensitive materials, which the United States may designate in accordance with paragraph 8 below, subject to this order, may be used by the defendant and defense counsel solely in connection with the defense of this case and for no other purpose and in connection with no other proceeding without further order of this court. So basically, and it goes on to say, you shall not disclose these sensitive materials or their contents directly or indirectly. I mean, she's going into great detail. And then there's a part that also says here, number 5, before providing any sensitive materials to an authorized person's, in other words, Trump, defense counsel must provide the authorized persons with a copy of this order, and the authorized person must agree in writing to abide by this order. So am I reading that right, Lisa, that any time they give Trump any of these so-called sensitive materials, they have to provide him with a copy of this order, and he's got to sign something that says he understands and he's willing to abide by the rules?
That's right. That's exactly as I read it. And in essence, it's a way to make sure that when he is held in contempt, which seems highly likely given his refusal to follow basically any orders of any court or, you know, of any kind, in essence, he will have had to have signed that he is willing to follow those rules and that he is basically willfully, knowingly violating them. So there can be no ambiguity that he somehow didn't know or didn't understand that by signing, he's agreeing to follow these rules. And again, these are rules designed to protect sensitive material in the trial, evidence that will becoming before those jurors, but that is not already in the public domain or already in his possession.
Right.
And so I think it's a very measured but appropriate ruling by the court. And it's also very carefully designed to protect against, you know, yet again, more claims of, you know, ignorance or that he has some right to do this, notwithstanding the norms for judicial proceedings and trials in particular.
Right. But okay, so I get all that. And it's written, I mean, it's to me very clear. And obviously, I'm not fluent in legalese. However, I'm reading through this whole thing and I'm not seeing if he does not abide by the rules stated here in this order, if he continues to flaunt his idiocy in public and goes against this order, what happens?
Well, if any party or lawyer disobeys an order of the court, or you know, a order in this sense, this type of ruling, they can be held in contempt. And if they're held in contempt, there are a number of penalties for contempt that could include jail time or mm-hmm. fine or both. So that could be served, you know, during the trial, after the trial. A lot of that is really, you know, it's really within the judge's discretion how to enforce a contempt order. It could be the basis for a threat to impose contempt on a, like a second instance, for example. But it's really within the judge's discretion how to handle what is like, you know, we say this word contempt or contempt of court. And clearly, Trump's whole modus operandi in many ways is based on contempt.
Yes.
And so like his part of his persona in the cult that he has, you know, tried to stoke is this cult of contempt, in essence. But there's a very particular, I mean, that like the more traditional use in the law is this idea that you are acting in contempt of court, meaning you're not following the court's orders. And so it is within the judge's discretion how to handle contempt, meaning violation of a direct order of the court.
Right. Now there were no cameras in the courtroom because it's a federal case. Now, I've heard conflicting reports on this, Lisa Graves. So one report I heard is that the judge herself could say, this is of such national importance, I'm going to allow cameras in this courtroom because I think it is of paramount importance and public's right to know. The other thing that I heard is that the Supreme Court has final say over whether or not cameras would be allowed in a federal courtroom. Is either one of those correct, or do you know?
Well, under the federal rules of criminal procedure, going back, you know, more than 50 years, actually, I think it might be almost 70 years now, there's been a prohibition in those criminal procedure rules for federal courts for electronic media coverage of criminal trials. Obviously, we've seen some state court proceedings that occur on, you know, on camera. There's some famous trials, as you well know, that have been televised. But in general, because of this longstanding provision of the rules for criminal procedure, federal trials have not been broadcast, and that is included both audio and video, that bar. It certainly would be possible to change those rules, but it would be a change in the rule. I don't think it's up to the Supreme Court to decide that for the lower court. It's a matter that has applied to the entire federal judiciary. It's certainly a broader public policy issue that could be examined and revisited overall. It just would be unlikely to happen for this trial. You know, like those are rules that, you know, probably should be revisited in the 21st century.
Yeah.
Should be able to see it. In fact, you know, in the Supreme Court, you know, which is not a criminal proceeding, but in the Supreme Court, there is audio, mm-hmm. or, you know, that is recorded of the oral arguments, and the decisions are rendered in audio form, in person, but also in audio form. And obviously, there's been a whole set of experimentation at the state level with trials that are publicized, and many states do have trials that are publicized for the public to see for themselves and hear for themselves, you know, what's happening in those trials. But it has been a longstanding rule in the federal criminal system, criminal court for criminal cases under the criminal procedure rules to not have televised trials.
In this case, I think it's insane. Look, this man is poised to be the Republican nominee in the 2024 presidential race. The public has a right to know what's going on. And since they're so distrusting of the reporting of the mainstream media, the only way to get them to see is to show the trial. Could somebody file a lawsuit, like saying we as citizens deserve the right to see this trial as it unfolds and not have to get the reporting on it through a third party?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I know that there have been efforts to assail this rule. It's Rule 53 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, you know, on sort of free press grounds that under the First Amendment, the press has a right to access trials. My understanding is that those efforts have been unsuccessful, in essence, at every turn. And it has also prohibited even still photography at trials. That's why in the federal system, you'll see these sort of lovely, but, you know, static,
the sketches,
from, court, you know, court reporters who are there specifically to sketch, because photos and videos and audio have not been allowed in federal court. So, you know, there certainly could be a new appeal to try to have this rule declared unconstitutional. It's a rule, not a statute. It's been in effect for a long time. You know, certainly things do change, and there may be some ways to try to say that it should not be allowed to be sustained. But that would be a separate substantial ruling. But on the broader point, Nicole, I do really believe that it would be valuable for the American people to hear and see the testimony in this trial, just as they could hear and see the testimony in the January 6th hearings that were so compelling, to really see, for example, these Republicans, tried and true Republicans, who stood up to Trump, who told him that this was ridiculous. He knew that this was a sham, these lies he was telling to raise money and try to stay in power against the will of the American people. And it was very compelling to see them testify, to see their credibility. And it's unfortunate that under these longstanding rules, that doesn't appear likely here. But I'm hopeful that there may be some other ways for people to learn about those trials, or to have transcripts made available on a rapid basis and other sort of eyewitness accounts from within the courtroom that are compelling. But it certainly is a disadvantage in terms of public knowledge to not have the American people to be able to see, for example, if Donald Trump were to testify, to see him actually testifying under oath, under penalty of perjury, versus the performance that he puts on these stages, with flags draped around him to suggest his patriotism, even as he has attacked the core notions that have held our democracy together about respecting the lawful and legitimate results of the election, which he knows damn well he lost.
That's right. Of course he does. Here's my prediction, that if nothing is successful and we don't get cameras in the courtroom, or even an audio recording like we do with the Supreme Court, transcripts will be released, right? We'll get that much at least. So we'll see. I predict every night, probably on MSNBC, but I'm guessing on a lot of podcasts, there will be dramatic reenactments of the hearing done by actors or, you know.
People. Actually, I'm sort of interested to see that, you know, the comedian who did those, the voiceover ones, whether there's like a reverse version of that, because she was so good.
Yes, I forgot about her. That's right. She did the Trump stuff. Yeah. Sarah something, I think her name was. Sort of disappeared, but she could make a comeback there. But she would have to do the voice. Now, I do pretty good Donald Trump, you know, but... I couldn't imagine having to be him. By the way, the one thing we know is what the judge, Chutkan, closed the hearing with a final warning for Trump's team. She said that the more inflammatory statements are made that could affect the jury, the, quote, greater the urgency will be that we proceed to trial quickly. Now, that said, Jack Smith is asking for a January 2nd trial date. Do you think that'll happen?
Well, I'm sure hopeful about it. I mean, I obviously Trump is complaining about it, but it's complaining of his own device, you know, in essence, like he's trying to, you know, I personally, you know, this idea that he declared that he's running for president months ago was designed to try to prevent a criminal investigation of him, which was clearly underway. I mean, we have, you know, since 2016, 2015, we have seen presidential candidates declare earlier and earlier rather than late in the year in the fall, like now. But that was clearly designed to try to give himself some sort of insulation from being held to account for his actual crimes. In my view, that evidence seems so compelling, but, you know, so he's going to want to try to push that off, and push it off. But, you know, I hope that trial date stands, because we, the American people, have been waiting far too long for justice. And I appreciate the tremendous efforts of the special prosecutor, of Jack Smith, and of the other investigators to really try to get these cases to trial. And I know it takes a long time, but the gears of justice have been grinding very slowly in holding Trump to account. And we desperately need him to be held to account, because if his sort of subversion of our democracy is not held to account, it becomes a strategy for the future. And it clearly is his strategy for the future.
Absolutely. Hey, Lisa, we got a phone call, and it's somebody that you know. Spocko is on the line. I'm hoping you'll be able to hear him.
Hello there.
Lisa, can you hear him?
Can you hear me?
I can. Hey, Spocko, it's so nice to hear your voice.
I am so glad to hear for you, and I was going to write you out about some of these things, but I see Nicole asked a bunch of the questions. I've been very interested in the next steps of Trump violating both his pretrial conditions and the protective order. And I've been talking to Glenn Kirshner about it. He did a nice video about the next steps. Could you talk about the specific next steps that will happen from getting into the point of, we know Trump's going to violate them. Who files the motion? Where does it come from? How does the judge decide on a show cause hearing? Could explain that part. And then the next step, showing the different pieces that are going to happen to get to the judge to a stern warning, a contempt. Could you explain that process? Because I'm hearing everybody saying, oh, this will never happen. He'll never spend time in jail. He'll never stop using Truth Social. I'd like you to explain the process, because I really think the judge is going to rule on it, and I'd like to hear how it's going to go.
Well, I appreciate that, Spocko. You know, I have to say, like, in general, I don't speculate much, but what I can say is, I totally respect Glenn Kirshner's work, who you mentioned, and your efforts as well, Spocko, to bring things to light. So I would just say, contempt is a power that judges hold. It's their power. They can act without a motion on any act that is in contempt of court. So she doesn't need a motion from the prosecutor to hold Trump in contempt. She can make that determination herself based on his actions. She can also entertain a motion, I suppose, from the prosecutor to hold them in contempt, but that's not necessary. She could ask for briefing on that, I suppose. But in general, again, that's not necessarily something that's even briefed typically. If a party is in contempt, the court handles that as a matter of her or his role as the adjudicator in that courtroom, and can devise any number of appropriate steps to respond to that contempt. There could be a requirement, as I mentioned to Nicole, that he be held in contempt and be sent to jail. She could have that. She could issue that order and sort of delay it until after the trial, so that he's not, staying overnight in jail between trial, dates of trial. She could issue a fine, impose a fine, and then another fine for every single instance, order that be paid. Mm. She could do both. She could issue other consequences for contempt. Of course, she has to ensure that the trial is fair, so that any result can be sustained on appeal. So she can't just basically rule against him and hold him guilty, you know, find him guilty over a decision of a jury. She doesn't have that power. She has to have the trial continue. I do think it's possible that his behavior could be disruptive, although he's been quiet in court, but he could certainly at some point be so disruptive to try to cause a mistrial. Oh. That could be a tactic that I could see him deploying. And then she'd have to weigh, you know, how to deal with his contemptuous activities in court if he were to do so, and what that means in terms of the ability to have the trial continue to its conclusion in order to protect a fair trial. So there, you know, in short, there's a number of things that a judge has the inherent power to do, other than in a criminal trial to rule, basically to find the defendant guilty if he's requested a jury trial, which he has a right to request under the Constitution. And so I am confident that other than Judge Cannon, who I have no confidence in whatsoever, administering her role fairly, but for the other judges involved, I'm confident that they will, you know, protect the integrity of the court and act appropriately to hold him in contempt, as you say, when he acts with contempt of court,
right, which he will.
I'm not going to get away with it. Yeah.
Right. All right. Thanks, Spocko. I appreciate the question. Lisa Graves, you know, we could spend another hour at least and more going over the Trump stuff, but there's a bunch of other questions that have come up today alone in the world of law. Special counsel for Hunter Biden? Is that what? What's that about?
Well, I think that, you know, this is not unusual. It's unusual in the sense that, you know, special counsel appointments aren't happening every day. But when you have allegations being made about a family member of the president or in the White House, it's the case that the Justice Department's longstanding rules are to prevent an appearance of conflict, any appearance that that the Attorney General might have. Might favor the president who appointed him. And so they would, you know, appoint a special counsel to ensure that, or at least try to ensure that there's an appearance of impartiality in assessing the claims. That's not to say that there is necessarily a legitimate basis for the array of claims that have been made by Jim Jordan and Comer and others, but just in order to protect the appearance of the impartiality of justice, to not have that that question, the questions that have been raised, not to have that handled by a political appointee, meaning the Attorney General,
right,
versus else who's not a political appointee of this president.
But now the guy, the prosecutor who's been overseeing this case for 5 years, I guess, the Hunter Biden investigation, was a Trump appointee, and he asked to be elevated to special counsel status, and Merrick Garland said yes. So why are the Republicans bitching?
Well, that's a question for the ages. You know, there's no consistency, no concern
with
democracy, you know, nothing would satisfy them, you know, basically, except for if they themselves were, I suppose, somehow charged with that task, which they would be completely unfit for because they have such bias and such disregard for actual evidence, as we've seen in the hearings, you know, thus far, let alone Benghazi and the fiasco that they pursued to the tune of millions and millions of tax dollars. In that instance, that they trumped up charges to try to damage Hillary Clinton in her, as she was going to be running for president. So, you know, nothing would satisfy them. Nothing would satisfy them. You know, there's no appointment of anyone would be sufficient for them, I guess, unless it was one of Donald Trump's own discredited lawyers.
Yeah, it's amazing. Again, there's so many things today, so it's sort of like the lightning round. We got to talk about the Supreme Court. So Clarence Thomas, ProPublica, did another expose, and we've learned that what we knew is even worse than what we thought. So here's the latest revelations about the Thomases.
The most complete accounting yet of the high life of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas shows much, much more than previously known.
Uh-oh.
More private jets, more fancy vacations, more sporting events, all gifts from mega-rich businessmen and documented through public and private records, plus interviews by ProPublica.
Justice Thomas has been living a life of extreme luxury for 30 years, underwritten by at least four different ultra-wealthy benefactors.
Earlier reports have revealed lavish gifts to Thomas, including a house for his mother and this 9-day vacation in Indonesia from conservative billionaire Harlan Crow.
I come from regular stock.
Who also underwrote a film about Thomas's humble taste.
I prefer the RV parks.
Now the list of benefactors includes three more names, according to ProPublica: David Sokol, Wayne Huizenga, and Tony Novelli. The report says the four moguls collectively treated Thomas to 38 destination vacations, including a previously unreported voyage on a yacht around the Bahamas, 26 private jet flights, plus an additional 8 by helicopter, a dozen VIP passes to professional and college sporting events, 2 stays at luxury resorts in Florida and Jamaica, and 1 standing invitation to an Uber-exclusive golf club. The dollar value? Likely in the millions, little of which appeared in required financial disclosures, according to ProPublica.
Amazing. So this just goes from bad to worse, and that we haven't even talked about Alito. The Supreme Court is out of control. What should Clarence Thomas resign? Because I know a lot of people are calling for that now.
Well, Thomas certainly should resign. I mean, he is corrupt. He has brought shame to the Supreme Court. He's a liar, and he's someone who has used his public office for private gain to live this life of luxury and hid it from the American people, but not from his closest friends. One of the funniest and most outrageous things about the story that was published by ProPublica, which is so good, and please read it, is that Jenny Thomas basically adds to these photos that she's distributed to her closest friends, basically bragging about these luxury trips, in which she says, 4 lucky people got to go with this billionaire in the skybox. 4 lucky couples got, you know, as if this was some sort of luck. They just were like chosen by lottery. They were handpicked by the billionaires who have befriended Thomas, to just lavish him with gifts that he and she feel entitled to have and to hide to the American people, while he goes on the air in speeches as well as in his, you know, supposed documentary about his life, his vanity pick, in which he claims, oh, he's just a man of the people. And
he loves the RVs, right? He prefers
the Walmart parking lot. And the RV, the very RV that he's talking about, was basically given to him by another billionaire who gave him a loan, which he, quote, satisfied, whatever that means, with no documentation that he ever actually paid it back. He has just been on the grift for decades now, and he's also issuing rulings that affirmatively damage our rights. He has got to be removed from office. He should resign. If there were an opportunity to impeach him, I would absolutely support it. If we had a Senate that was not corrupted in its own self in terms of the way those Republicans refused to impeach Donald Trump after the attack on January 6th, Clarence Thomas would be convicted of vice and graft, of using his office for his own personal gain by allowing these billionaires who befriended him after he became a Supreme Court justice to basically wine and dine and schmooze and booze him. And they have business before the court, in part because so many of these cases that have been coming to the court are part of this Republican agenda to destroy Roe, to destroy our ability to mitigate climate change and more. And these billionaires have been bankrolling politicians to achieve just that, even if they themselves were not appearing in the case before him. It is corrupt. It's wrong. And I look forward for there being actual legal consequences for Clarence Thomas. Just today, I'll just end on this note, Nicole, 5 members of the House of Representatives, including Jamie Raskin and Representative Nadler and AOC and Hank Johnson and others, signed a letter asking for a criminal referral to the U.S. Department of Justice to investigate Thomas. And I'm so glad they did so.
Oh, that's the best news I've heard all day. Somebody's got to do something to hold this guy accountable. And, you know, then look into Alito and Roberts and the rest of them as well. Because this is, you know, we police ourselves. Well, sorry, nobody else gets to police themselves. You need oversight. That's how our government system is based, right? On a system of checks and balances, allegedly.
Yeah, and Roberts needs to be held to account for this because this is his court. He's been at the helm since 2005. He has allowed this culture of corruption to thrive. He has not policed it. He's dodged every effort by Congress to move forward with ethics reforms. He should be held to account for allowing this corruption to thrive and flourish at the court. And Alito, you know, as well, you know, I just think it's just so grotesque that the highest court in the country not only has no standards, but in fact, they appear to be unwilling to follow even the most basic notions of appearance of impropriety, appearance of basically using your public office for private benefit. Clearly, that's what's happening. And this court, meanwhile, is acting with such arrogance to destroy longstanding precedents that protect our rights and do so in a way that serves the interests of the billionaires who have been bankrolling these trips, as well as the billionaires who've been bankrolling Leonard Leo in his effort to pack the Supreme Court and other courts in this country.
And here they did. And that's exactly what they did. And yet the Democrats are inept in terms of countering it. The Republicans packed the Supreme Court. We're talking about increasing the number of justices on the court to make it a bit more equitable, to get more reasonable voices there. Because first of all, I contend that all three of those seats that Donald Trump filled were stolen. So, and anybody can argue that at least two of them were. And they're the ones who packed the court with the most right wing, I'm not even going to say conservative, you know, right wing extremist kind of justices, if you can call them that, or injustices. And it would only be fair, but the Democrats are just, they're allowing the language of, oh, the Democrats want to pack the courts. The Republicans are masters at projection and, you know, doing the opposite world thing. But
well, so we need to unpack that court. That's what has to happen.
There you go. Exactly.
Unpack that court, restore its integrity, and restore the rule of law, and not just for the rule of law to be the rule of the billionaires who want these laws changed to suit their own personal agenda, regardless of the interests of the American people. So I'm a little more hopeful than you about this, Nicole, because I feel like there's growing support for addressing this serious crisis in multiple ways. It's both a crisis of the integrity of the court in terms of its ethics, but also the integrity of the court in terms of the substance and the willingness of this court to destroy people's rights because it's basically aligned with the party that appointed them. And so I think we've got a growing number of Americans who strongly support reforming the court, and we have a growing number of people in Congress who are supportive too. But we're going to need to have control of the Senate and the House and the White House.
Yes.
In the next cycle, in my opinion, personal opinion, in order to have any chance to adopt these reforms. But you know, I am hopeful about it. And in fact, I mean, it's horrifying what's happening with the court, but I'm glad that people can see how corrupt it is, how out of control it is, and that we absolutely have to hold it in check.
Without a doubt. Lisa Grace, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because again, you're more obviously more plugged into the legal world than I am. And I'm glad that you're optimistic about it, because and I think the more news that comes out, the more we learn about the shit that Clarence Thomas has been pulling for 30 years and not reporting it. Bad enough that his wife has been an activist participating in things like January 6th, in participating in trying to steal the election while they say stop the steal talking, you know, this is it's beyond the pale and enough already. So I'm glad you're optimistic about that. We could go on for hours and you'll just have to come back because there's so much more to talk about. I want to remind you, you said it before, in my opinion, Lisa Graves comes on here as a private citizen, but you should check out the work she's doing at truenorthresearch.org, because you do You out the bad guys. I mean, your work really, really opened the door and taught us about the Koch brothers and about Leonard Leo and about Citizens United and about ALEC and all these groups that are working to undermine democracy. And that's the work you do. So I want people to go check out TrueNorthResearch.org. And David just came in and handed me a note, and he said to thank you for subscribing to his Follow the Moneyball podcast.
Oh yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. Well, it's a joy to be on your show, Nicole, anytime. And I know these topics are, it's just like just so much every single day, but happy to join you anytime. And I appreciate always you're so knowledgeable and prepared, and just really a joy to have this conversation with you. And thanks, Spocko, for calling in, and the audience out there. Really appreciate everything you're doing and not giving up. We cannot give up. We have to get stronger. We have to multiply, get more people to move forward to protect the freedoms that our democracy is intended to secure. And of course, that includes having actually fair courts versus this captured court that is out of control. So thanks for having me on, Nicole, and I hope you have a great weekend.
You too. Lisa Graves, thank you so much, and we will talk again soon. Much
thanks,
love.
Thank
you. All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Lisa Graves, again, you can follow her still on the Twitters, and yes, I still call it Twitter, at the Lisa Graves. And again, do check out TrueNorthResearch.org. Okay, and with that, the weekend is here. It's here. It's here. I'm going to go. We'll be back Monday. Same time, same bat channel, all that shit. And yes, David has a podcast. So those of you who missed it the other day, my husband David is, spent 44 years as an agent for Major League Baseball players. And so he finally has started a podcast, and it's called Follow the Moneyball, where he talks with, you know, people about the business of sports, with an emphasis on baseball because that's, you know, his world. But if you're a sports fan, you will enjoy this. If you're a baseball fan, you'll really enjoy it. So, Google Follow the Moneyball podcast, David Sloan. You know what? I'm going to put a link, on my website. I will try to remember to do that this evening, to his podcast. But if you can't find it, just shoot me an email and I'll send you a link. But you should be able to get it just, you know, wherever you get your podcasts, just look for Follow the Money Ball. And his name is David Sloan, S-L-O-A-N-E. All right. With that, we're done. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Try to turn the news off and do something that you enjoy. Like listen to David's podcast if you're a baseball fan. All right. Think It Through says big Yankee fan here. Okay. Well, the episode he posted today is with a guy named Mitch something. Mitch, it's not Yankovic. What? Mitch what? Lukovics. Lukovics, who is the executive assistant to the general man? No.
Special
assistant to the general manager of the Tampa Bay Rays. But he would, here, you tell them who he is.
Special assistant to the general manager of the Tampa Bay Rays. For years and years, he was their director of player development. Before that, he was the director of player development for the New York Yankees. He was there and was one of the people who was instrumental in the development of Derek Jeter, Jorge Posada, Paul O'Neill, Mariano Rivera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, so there's something you can do this weekend is go listen to his podcast. Again, I'll put a link on the blog at NicoleSandler.com as well. All right? All right, I got to go. See you mañana. Oh, see you Monday. God, do I need a weekend or what? Over and out. Later, dudes. Bye.